Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show. Today, MAGA Doctrine is available. My new book. We are aiming to make the New York Times bestseller list. So if you have not already, you can order it and get it today. Go to bookstores across the country. Go to Amazon. Yep, not a huge fan of Amazon, but you can go to Amazon and get your copy. MAGA Doctrine, M-A-G-A Doctrine. Please check it out. It is a thorough summary of the successes of the Trump presidency and the underlying philosophy of what the president believes and why he believes it. And no better guest to be able to dive into this than Congressman Mark Meadows. We had an amazing conversation. We sat down. He has been a Trump loyalist and an American patriot through and through. So please enjoy this exclusive conversation with Mark Meadows. But before we get started, make sure you buy your copy of the MAGA Doctrine. All right, everybody, enjoy this conversation with Mark Meadows.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Well, joining me now is one of the few people I look up to in Washington, D.C., which really...
I was going to say the same about you. I mean, I look up to you, Charlie. I mean, not only are you part of it, but you have energized people, a group of people that a lot of us old guys with gray hair never thought would get in the fight. And so thank you for what you do, but
thank
it's
you.
Great to be
here. Well, I appreciate
with you.
That. I don't look up to many people in this town with everything that's been happening, but you have been a fighter for liberty and freedom and for our country really courageously for a couple of years now. So
well, thank you. I tell you, the big thing when you fight for freedom, you fight for the right thing, sometimes it feels like a lost cause. And you know, you get to talk to hundreds of thousands of people every year. And a lot of them have given up hope. But as you know, and as I know, if you fight for the right reason, in spite of the ridicule that you may get, a lot of the audience listening, sometimes it's the fight that you get on college campuses.
Yes.
It's in, it may be in your community, in your churches, your place of business. But ultimately, when you're willing to speak up, others start to follow.
Well, my test of whether or not someone's going to be an effective member of Congress is, do they care what the Washington Post and New York Times is writing about them? That's my first test.
And that's a good test. If they care, they need to go home.
Right. What I love about you, though, and just for our audience, a lot of young people don't really understand what the House Freedom Caucus is.
Right.
And it's been very important, in the last couple of years especially. But I'd make the argument it was even more important when there was a Democrat in the White House, and
right.
It just seemed as if the Republican Party wanted to just give Barack Obama whatever he wanted all the time. And so the House Freedom Caucus was born out of the idea that, there's a need for principled stands within the Republican Party just as much, against the Democrat Party. And you've grown it, right? I mean, you were the chairman for some time.
Yeah, I was a chairman. Actually, and a lot of people don't know this, but this really, the Freedom Caucus started in two states, North Carolina and Ohio, where Jim Jordan
yeah.
and I come from. I can remember literally being looking out at the mountains from my house in North Carolina, calling Jim Jordan and saying, listen, we have got to be organized. We've got to be willing to fight. And even if there's only a handful of us, if we organize together, I think that's key. So I gave him four names. I had four names, and then the Freedom Caucus started from there. But it's about fighting, as you mentioned, Charlie, it's about fighting for, what is true north, pun intended. There was a turning point. There was a turning point where all of a sudden what we found is the fight was not just against the Democrats, but oftentimes it was within our own party
sure.
of people that were willing to give Washington, D.C. more voice than the people back home.
Well, the biggest challenge I have going to college campuses is explaining away the sins of the Republican Party. Because if Republicans actually governed like conservatives most of the time, my job would be so much easier.
But no, you're right.
I get feedback from students. They say, well, Charlie, everything you talk about is great, but here's the record. Under Republican governance, these things have happened. And the president has changed this dramatically in such a positive way. But there's a lot to be said, though, that our own party is the practitioner of a lot of these issues.
Yeah, and I do think that really the audience and the group of people that you've been able to motivate are the ones that ultimately, from the college campuses, mm-hmm. will be the defining factor of who we are as a Republican Party, but more importantly, who we are as a republic, because, it's those thought leaders, people like yourself, who ultimately are going to be in the Oval, be in the halls of Congress, be the CEOs of companies, and they're the ones that are going to look for that true north. Mm-hmm. And I used to say, given each and every day, people are a great evaluator of false narratives, and that's a polite way of saying they're a great evaluator of when they hear a whole lot of bull. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole lot of that coming out of Washington, D.C. And yet, here's what I've come to know: if you have someone who is a Democrat who votes like a Democrat, and you have a Republican who says they're a Republican and votes like a Democrat, they'll pick the Democrat who votes like a Democrat every day. And they want something that's authentic.
Yes, that's
and
right.
That's where Donald Trump comes in. He's authentic. They know that he is not a politician.
Hey, everyone. I want to tell you about an awesome service called Credible. What is Credible? Credible.com is an online marketplace that gets you pre-qualified student loan refinancing rates from up to 10 different lenders. What do? They help people get out of student loan debt. It's that simple. If you've got student loan debt, you could benefit. With a lower rate, you could save on interest or lower your monthly payment. And with a shorter loan term, you can get debt-free faster. You could potentially consolidate all your student loan bills in one place. Gives you serious peace of mind, and Credible customers have given awesome reviews about how much better their lives have been after refinancing their student loans. On Credible, you see actual pre-qualified rates from up to 10 different lenders, whereas with some of the other marketplaces, you get ranges or rates or ballparks. And I could tell you, it only takes a couple minutes, and it doesn't impact your credit, which is a big deal for me. They never sell your data, so you won't receive spam or phone calls from dozens of lenders. So right now, please visit Credible.com/Charlie. That's Credible.com/Charlie. When you refinance your student loans via Credible, they'll give you a $200 gift card. Fill in a couple pieces of info to check what rates you're eligible for. Again, that's Credible.com/Charlie. Refinance your student loans and start saving today. I tell this to a lot of politicians, and you get this. The biggest issue in America that the Chamber of Commerce and those that wing of the whole Republican Party refuses to recognize is money in politics.
Yeah.
Is the fact that people are only doing what the lobbying class and what the ruling class tells them to do. And Donald Trump was the perfect counter to that because he's a billionaire that self-financed his own primary.
Right.
And it resonated with people because they said, well, he can't be bought.
Right.
It seems that everyone we send to D.C. just changes when they get there. And I'm afraid that in the future, Republicans are going to not learn that lesson of Donald Trump. And I think Bernie Sanders, one of the reasons he resonates is because he says, I can't be bought. I only take small dollar contributions. Now, I could make an argument it's actually not the case, but that's the way people interpret it.
Sure.
But to your point, people want authenticity. They'll buy someone who actually believes what they're saying.
Well, and it is, and they've gotten that with Donald Trump. Here's my big fear, and you just touched on this. Here in Washington, D.C., there's a group of people who are what I would call the wait and see.
That's right.
They are waiting until Donald Trump gets out of office to see if that continues, or they're waiting to see if indeed this is something that's not just a flash in the pan.
This is such an important point. I meet with I
You know, I try to stay friendly with all people, you know, right. in the conservative Republican side. And there's been a lot of people that have stepped up and defended the president under duress that I have been very surprised with. But you could tell their staff, especially, they're just, and I'm not going to say any names at all, but they're kind of just, is it over yet? Like, is this whole kind of like representative government over yet? Can we get back to kind of, you know, keeping our borders open and giving away money to other countries and raising taxes? And
well, and because of what you're doing at Turning Point, and because you have mobilized hundreds of thousands of young people, that next generation of leaders, and I would say even now a current crop of leaders that are leading in their spheres of influence. But because you've done that, we're not going back. We've broken that belief barrier where all of a sudden somebody says, "Well, gosh, you know, President Donald Trump, I didn't vote for him. I didn't even support him, but he's been able to accomplish things in an authentic way." Mm-hmm. And once you've done that, then everybody else that follows, they're going to look for that authenticity.
Yeah, I hope for a Republican Party that follows that mold in the future. Yeah. One of real principled stances and, you know, moving forward in that direction. So one of the things that I think the president has tried to address, but it seems Congress hasn't been able to do it, is the rising debt and deficit.
Right.
And I talk about how we have kind of just forgotten that issue. I know you haven't. You talk about it a lot. You've been one of the few courageous leaders on, you know, fiscal irrationality, but we're approaching $22 trillion in debt. Maybe even more than that. When I started Turning Point USA, we were $12 trillion in debt.
Wow.
So $10 trillion just in the couple of years of...
So you know, it's all your fault.
Basically, ever since Turning Point has started. Exactly. Yeah. But I remember doing speeches saying, you know, we really got to get this, you know, this debt and deficit under control. The president has submitted budgets to Congress that would balance, and he's done his part. But it seems that there's something in the water here that just makes people addicted to borrowing money.
Yeah, there's two groups of people who love to spend money in Washington, D.C., and it's called Democrats and Republicans. you know, and sadly, what we see is that fiscal restraint that you and I not only espouse to, but believe that we have to get around that and address that, you know, have to get our arms around it and address it. Here's where I do think in the second term of a Donald Trump presidency, the first year or so, it was learning the lies that he was going to be told by Congress. And so as we went into those first 2 years when we had the majority, he was believing that, oh gosh, well, we'll be able to fight here. We'll be, and because he was being told that by every single leader that went into the Oval Office. He now recognizes with Nancy Pelosi in the Speaker's chair that not only was false back then, but that he's getting the same kind of arguments from a democratically controlled House of Representatives. So I've talked to the president. I think what he believes is that we had to build back our military, which we are well on our way to doing that. But they held our military hostage, and so they've increased spending everywhere else. It's not just there. We've got Social Security and the Medicare issue. I think that we can address the budget and Social Security in the next 4 years. I believe the president is actually, I know that they've met with some members of both parties to try to do that. But it's scary because once you get the compounding of interest where we are, it becomes almost impossible to right the ship.
Yeah, I mean, even when interest rates go up a little bit, we're going to be talking about annual interest payments for $400, $500 billion a year before you even get to the principal or funding other things that actually need to be funded by the government. And I mean, I've heard horror stories from many people in your Freedom Caucus about, well, can we just stop paying dead people? Can we just start with that? And, you know, you can't even get agreement there. I mean, just...
You know,
very it's, basic
it,
things.
The greatest thing to... eternal life here in outside of a faith component is here in Washington, D.C., is a federal program and a federal spending
That's
program.
Right.
They live on forever, regardless of who's in control. And so we've got to cut that back. And when you can't even cut the spending for people who have passed on, you can imagine what it's like with each member of Congress. Because here's what happens. Everybody says they're for cuts unless it affects them.
Of course.
And so it's going to take unbelievable courage and leadership. And sadly, a lot of members of Congress have the backbone of a banana.
That's correct.
It gets real squishy.
Well, and that's where, you know, I talk very vocally, and it resonates with students and young people about reforming the way that people are influenced to make their decisions, such as how, you know, lobbyists have just total inside access to Washington, D.C. and seem to dictate the agenda. And it seems that President Trump has finally set the agenda. And that's what I love about he's able to do on Twitter, and he's able to do these rallies where he's actually saying, no, this is what we're going to try to accomplish, and hold people accountable to that.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether it be the passage of the USMCA or the tax cut bill, Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, you know, he's done a pretty phenomenal job there.
With home security, there's two ways you can go about protecting your home. There's the traditional way, where you have to wait weeks for a technician to do a messy installation that could cost you a small fortune. Or there's the other way, the Simply Safe way. Simply Safe is everything you need in a home security system. It's award-winning protection. Two-time winner of CNET Editor's Choice Award, Simply Safe blankets your whole home in safety. You barely notice it's there. All the property I care about use Simply Safe. What's truly remarkable is that you can set up the system all by yourself. That's right, all by yourself. Anyone can do it. It takes only 30 minutes, or maybe an hour tops. And there's absolutely no trade-offs to your safety. None. You have an army of highly trained security experts ready to dispatch police to your home at a moment's notice 24/7. It's why The Verge calls Simply Safe the best home security system. So check it out today at simplysafe.com/charlie. Get free shipping and a 60-day risk-free trial at simplysafe.com/charlie, simplysafe.com/charlie.
I was sad to see and read that you're leaving Congress. Usually I'm happy when people are leaving Congress, but not the case with you. So are you allowed to say kind of what you're thinking? Or?
You know, we'll stay in the fight. We're going to be, my wife and I will be here in Washington, D.C. We'll continue to fight arm in arm with you, stand shoulder to shoulder to fight the good fight. Obviously, my job right now is to help the president get reelected. We're going to be all hands on deck to do that. And the decision on what I do next has not been totally made. There are a few options out there, and you know, the next few months might do that. I don't know that I can break it here on your podcast.
Okay.
But yeah, you know, we'll get a few more downloads if I did.
Yeah,
I promise
right.
you. Right now it's still, the jury's still out on what I'm going to do next.
Well, I can offer some suggestions. I think you'd be great as close to the president as possible, whatever that might be.
Well, you're very kind. I love the president, and you and I both have a good relationship with him, and partly because he's authentic.
That's right.
And he loves this country, and he's not afraid of a fight. And so that's been the great thing. I've got one message, if you don't mind.
Yeah, of course.
One message that I would love for all the students and young people that are listening in, and this is more applies to them than if you've downloaded this and you've got more gray hair. To the young people, I want to say this. Do not think that your calling is decades away. When we look at John Quincy Adams, he was ambassador to Europe at age 15. When we look at some of the great leaders, back in the founding of our country, 15, 16 years of age, and they were leading, some leading Navy at age 15. So when we look at that, the message I have to each one, take this opportunity now to lead.
Mm-hmm.
Others will follow.
And we see that, you know, in the work that we're doing, that students are rising up in record numbers. And what we're doing is surprising to the left, because they always felt that they had a dominant monopoly on high school and college campuses. And they do everything they possibly can to try to protest and disrupt, you know, our programming, because they feel as if they're entitled to every single young mind in the country.
You're exactly right. But I can tell you, for a guy like me, having so many conservatives, young conservatives coming along, is an encouragement to me to stand in the fight. You know, it's one thing, you have your peers and you see them and you either get support or not. But to have hundreds of thousands of young people that are conservatives that are saying, listen, we're applauding what you're doing, it makes me get up in the morning and be willing to go into a fight. And sometimes when I know that I'm going to be facing a mainstream media that will not be kind, mm-hmm. or a New York Times or Washington Post, as you said, sure. headlines that won't be kind. But their support via Instagram or Twitter or anything else, you know, is a real encouragement.
So I have a question I ask a lot of people, and I'd love to get your answer.
Yeah.
Do you think America will be more or less socialist in 10 years?
Well, sadly, on the trajectory that we're on right now, I would say more socialist in 10 years than where we are today, without a doubt. I mean, just because what we see is a lot of times on college campuses, they come out of this is, well, let's go ahead and just have a socialist model because it makes everybody equal.
Yeah.
And what we want is everybody with equal opportunity to succeed, mm-hmm. not necessarily that everybody has to be equal, because as we know from, you know, a socialist dynamic actually doesn't promote prosperity or anything else. But what I do believe is if we're willing to address it now, even though the curve is going down in the next 10 years, that we will hit bottom sometime over the next 10 years, and there will be just an unbelievable rise going the other way when people figure out that it doesn't work.
The second part of that is very uplifting. The hitting bottom doesn't Well, I asked that question because I encourage people to look at this in decade-long kind of spans, because that's how the left looks at things.
Sure they do.
They say, let's borrow as much money because it's going to destabilize the American economy, which will depreciate our currency, which will allow us to nationalize everything. That's basically their program.
Right.
That's why they want to spend money, is because when you have huge debts, you can only inflate your way out of it, or you nationalize your industries.
Right.
And that's their end game.
I mean,
Bernie Sanders is a canary in the coal mine. And as we say, whatever happens on college campuses will soon happen in the halls of Congress. And you're serving you know, alongside some of those radicals. And I'm not going to ask you to, you know.
Well, we are. I mean, some of those.
I would love to get your insight.
Yeah, I mean, I serve on a committee where I have three of the four members of the squad on my committee. So, I mean, I get to see.
They're constantly wrong, but never in doubt.
They are always very confident of their opinion. I can tell you that confidence does not normally translate
to wisdom.
To a good paycheck either. I just want to let you know. I mean, when we see that, it's all about fighting back and making sure that as they look at taking someone from someone else that they didn't earn, why do we suddenly think that that's a good model for success? Success in the short run, but long term, it doesn't pay.
Well, and the members of the squad, that's what I deal with. It's very similar. That kind of venom for our country.
Yeah.
That kind of opposition to our founding ideas.
Yeah.
In fact, one of the members of the squad, the leader, I guess, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and I can speak more candidly. I don't expect you to, you know, chime in on it. But, you know, she goes and she says that, you know, our land was stolen and taken from indigenous individuals from Mexico and Central America. And if they come into our country, it's their land too. And I paused, and when she said that, I said, only a university could make somebody think something as foolish as that. No real life or practical experience could give you that.
Listen, when you look at that model, you can look throughout the entire globe, and you can look where property rights and the rights of those who trade property, have title to property, the capitalistic way of actually growing wealth actually works. It doesn't work in those countries where you don't have that ability.
Yes.
In fact, what you see are coups over and over and over again, because ultimately they've got to look to their government to provide instead of the prosperity of an economy that allows everybody the opportunity.
Well,
for success.
That's really the main debate. And if our media had any integrity whatsoever, they would go to Senator Bernie Sanders, who's now, some could say, the front runner to the Democrat nomination, or he's up there, which is horrifying to think about. Horrifying. And they should ask him, they say, well, what industries would you want to nationalize? Because you've called for the nationalization of banks,
right?
Nationalizations of hospitals,
right?
Nationalization of transportation. What private property, do you think private properties are right? That's a very basic question to ask.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, as podcaster, you know, Democrat colleagues, because private property is a right. I mean, in the original drafting of the Constitution and the Declaration, it was life, liberty, and private property, and they changed the pursuit of happiness.
But that pursuit of happiness had the ability to actually own and maintain
correct.
Property. We were on a mission trip in Fiji, and somebody said, well, poor guy, he had to go on a mission trip in Fiji. But there's unbelievable poverty on this island that actually is viewed by most as being this
tropical resort.
Just a great resort. But literally, I walked through open ditches where, you know, sewage ran in the open ditches. And part of their problem is that entire ownership and private property. And they have coup after coup after coup of a place that's relatively stable when we think of it from a visitor standpoint. But from a governance standpoint, it's not. And it all comes back to that one issue.
Well, it's the tragedy of the commons. When everybody owns something, no one owns it.
Yeah.
And so you look at the things that work, that frustrate Americans the most, what institutions that they have to use, the TSA, the post office.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you ask a student, wait a second, you want the TSA running your healthcare?
Yeah.
I mean, they, not exactly the most passionate, you know, individuals. They are so slow at working. They're not good at what they do. And I'm not trying to miscategorize. There's some very good civil servants there. But let's just be, I wouldn't hire most of any of them to do, you know, an important job. I'm very, as you could tell, anti-fourth branch of government. So that's
there's
a lot of, you know, energy around that.
There is a lot of energy, and I think what happens is whenever those that are listening in right now, they come into contact with a federal government, they make a decision on whether they want more of it or less
of it. That's right.
Now, most of the people that are here in the halls of Congress that want more of government, they've not waited in a line. They've not. They don't think of it in
that
terms. They think of it, if we can get more government, it's going to help everybody else. But what they're really saying is, we've got to grow it to the size that no one would ever have to wait. Now, we have over 70,000 people working for TSA and the Department of Homeland Security.
I say fire them all, but that's okay. You can laugh. That's, I say it all the time.
Well, I'll let you say it. I don't know that I can get away with that.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, you don't have to say it.
Yeah.
But privatize the TSA. It is the most ridiculous, inept group of... Anyway, you can continue with that. 70,000.
So what we have to do is we have to figure out a way for the private sector to provide for many of these services. And sadly, what we do is, even when the private sector comes in, we put so many federal regulations on it that we make it act like a government, even when it's the private sector. And so that's one of the things that the president has... Yes. So you've got checkers who check in on checkers who check on checkers who check the passengers. So,
and they
I
mean this, if you actually look at the independent studies of the TSA, they actually don't do a great job at actually identifying weapons, and the water bottle thing makes no sense to me. But I rest my case on the TSA. It's just one particular point, but
they can find your water bottle, but they may not be able to find something that actually may bring a plane down.
That's right. So the other kind of broader point with that, though, is that there is this fourth branch of government, you know, in civics, and I tell this to students a lot, and you've been wonderful on this, Congressman, where we're taught there's three branches of government when there's really four, and the fourth is actually the most scary and the most powerful. They're unelected, they're unknown, and they have basically unlimited amounts of power. And that's the IRS, it's the TSA, they have the power to audit, shut down businesses, and the president has done a great job of, I think, allowing deregulation and better judges so that there could be a counterbalance to that. What's been your experience trying to rein in the power of the fourth branch of government?
Yeah, it's been extremely difficult, if not impossible, to do it. And part of that is that what we have is a web of bureaucrats that truly, as they're embedded in every item, they actually refer themselves to other bureaucrats who refer themselves to other bureaucrats that do not allow you to actually get to the decision maker. And so as a member of Congress, one of the things that I've actually had to do is kind of cut through that. So if I've got people that are having problems with
constituents,
it,
right?
Constituents, you actually cut through it. But even as a member of Congress, I called in one time, and this was on a Social Security disability claim, and called in I was a new member of Congress. So I called in, I said, well, this is Mark Meadows. I didn't identify as a member of Congress. Called 20 different people at this agency, left messages. Didn't get a call back from not a single one because they didn't know it was a member of Congress. So finally, I got a hold of somebody, and they said, well, they've been really busy. This person has not been able to call you back because they've been really busy and they've been traveling. Well, when I identified myself as a member of Congress, they go, oh, well, that shouldn't have happened to you. There's the problem. It shouldn't happen to any American.
Well, that's a ruling class syndrome, though, is what it is.
Yeah.
Is that, wait, you're in the club? Okay, we'll call you back.
When running a business, HR issues can kill you. Wrongful termination suits, minimum wage requirements, and labor regulations. HR managers, their salaries are not cheap. I know this from experience at Turning Point USA. In fact, they average over $70,000 a year. Bambi, spelled BAMBEE, was created specifically for small businesses. I've looked into their product. They do a great job. You can get a dedicated HR manager to craft HR policy and maintain your compliance, all for just $99 a month. With Bambi, you can change HR from your biggest liability to your biggest strength. Your dedicated HR manager is available by phone, email, or real-time chat. That means anytime you have a problem, you can get in touch with them, and it's not going to cost you $90,000, $70,000, $100,000 a month. From onboarding to terminations, they customize your policies to fit your business, and they help you manage your employees day-to-day, all for just $99 a month. Month-to-month, there are no hidden fees. You can cancel anytime. You didn't start your business because you wanted to spend time in HR compliance. Let Bambi help get your free HR audit today. Go to Bambi.com/Kirk right now to schedule your free HR audit. That's Bambi.com/Kirk. Spell BAM to the BEE.com/Kirk. Great program. It will save you money. And so there's a couple issues in the time we have remaining that I would encourage you as in your advocacy that I think that are total, you know, winning issues and you've been great on. And I tell this every time I see the president, I say, Mr. President, there are five words that can make you a two-term successful president. And it's school choice for black kids.
Yeah.
I think school choice is the issue we don't talk about enough.
Yeah.
It got Ron DeSantis elected governor in Florida. It works everywhere it's implemented. And the black community is begging for Republicans to take leadership on this issue. And so have you seen a lot of movement or interest in that in Congress?
Well, we've seen a lot on our side. So here's the interesting thing is I have Washington, D.C. under one of my committees. One of the things
do you really?
Okay. I do. And one of the things that I've been pushing is school choice here in Washington, D.C. It works in Washington, D.C. How do I know? Because I've got moms and dads and oftentimes single moms and single dads who have a choice. They're not tied to a certain school. And these kids not only are excelling, they're happy. And so to see a predominantly African-American community come into a hearing and say, we want school choice, you're spot on, but the fight is huge. The teacher unions see
the NEA and the AFT, Randy Weingarten, all these people.
They see this as a huge fight, and honestly, it's not going to be. We'll make all the schools much better if you allow for choice, but we will ultimately get rid of some of the bad
teachers,
and that's what they're afraid of. And there's so few. My wife was a public school teacher, so this is not a ding on public school teachers. Actually, we're here. We want to elevate everyone who feels a calling because they don't go into it for the money.
Right, and I applaud you for your leadership on that issue. And every time I see a lawmaker, I say, please, whatever you're doing, talk about it more because
you're right to highlight it.
And it's a winning issue. And you have the cartel, I call them the cartel, on the other side, which is the teacher unions and the mob bosses that disenfranchise, you know, these young kids. And you have rubber rooms. I'm sure you're familiar with rubber rooms, which are these buildings of teachers that are pedophiles and criminals that they can't fire if they get full salary and pension, all protected by, you know, the NEA and the AFT, which is, you know, it remarkably frustrating. And so, the other kind of, you know, part, the other issue, I guess you could say that, you know, I tell this, you know, to the president, and he's so awesome because he's so receptive.
Yeah.
And he loves to hear different ideas. And I say, please don't allow the left to win the issue on money and politics, because it is something that there's huge apprehension in the apprehension might not be the right word, but there's a lot of anxiety with Americans that feel as if their lawmakers are just being purchased by lobbyists. Now, that's a very, you know, candid way to describe it. But if we can, I don't know what your stance is on term limits or, you know.
I'm for term limits and I'm for limiting money. Actually, Ted Cruz and I did a bill that actually looked at super PACs and how to at least keep them transparent and ultimately diminish their influence. But it's not just that. It's the lobbyists. It's everything else. It's time that we make sure that members of Congress look in the mirror, and the person that they see in that mirror is someone who's dedicated to the people back home, not to special interests in D.C.
Well, yeah, and I for one example that I think the president should run on, which is if you lobby for a foreign government, you shouldn't be able to contribute money to a congressman. Because you're basically, I mean, there's no different than the foreign government actually giving the money directly to the congressman.
Well said.
And
well said.
So I just, for me, that.
No, I think that's valid. And I think we can see some reforms there, but it gets back to the same thing that we started this whole podcast with. It's when you go to cut and it cuts in someone's backyard, everybody's for reform until it affects
them. That's right.
So this is one where we're going to probably have to join hands with Democrats and take the leap together.
Yeah, cut every program except mine. So in closing, Congressman, what's your favorite story with President Trump? Like what's something that stands out you really want the audience to know?
Listen, this president loves the people that he actually believes in, and whether it's at a rally or whether it's at a conversation, I see him up close and personal behind the scenes where he wants the American people to experience the Oval Office. You've been there, I've been there. He wants you to do that. But probably the biggest thing is, I love his red button. He's got a little 12-inch block with a red button. He hits the red button, and Diet Cokes come out from all kinds of places. and every time he hits it, he'll hit again. And he says, "Well, do you want one?" So you're never lacking for a Diet Coke when you're around the President
of the
United
States.
That's very
funny. Well, my favorite experiences with him is he always asks me, "How can I help you?"
Which is such an overwhelming question
with someone who can launch a Tomahawk missile to any direction, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, I'm good because I feel as if I should be asking the question, you know. And
we should, but that shows who this president is. He wants to help you. He wants to help me. And he wants to help every person listening here in spite of who they voted for.
And he's even delivering results for people that didn't vote for him.
Yeah.
You know, for communities that he lost by 90%, which is, he's not just quote unquote pandering to his base. And, you know, I look at him as a vessel, as a singular vessel that represents 40 years of disenfranchising from both political parties, of bad trade deals and open borders and anti-constitutional
law. The forgotten man and woman, he's remembering them.
Yeah. Well, so last question is North Carolina.
Yeah.
It's in play.
It is.
How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I feel good about it. It's in play. You can't take anything for granted. You got to run through the finish tape. But I think the president actually wins North Carolina by half a percentage more. But it only is going to happen if the people that are listening here, lots of college campuses, lots of liberals.
There's like 108 colleges in North Carolina or something.
Yeah,
right?
But it only takes a few on each campus to stand up and say, "I'm voting for Donald Trump." And it will be bold and courageous. But others will follow.
Now, in your district, do you have Rebels Corner? Is that what they call it? Or some?
Well, it's pretty good. So what we have is we have a number of areas that you could call Rebels Corner, but not officially.
So, but for people that don't know, those are areas during the Civil War that they take a lot of pride in. essentially the North Carolina ethos or something like that.
I remember reading about it. I mean, in my district, we actually had a group that went with the North, and we had a so it was a real eclectic group because, you know, kind of independent streak.
Yeah, sure.
And maybe that's where I get it, representing a district that has
and
an
you have Appalachian State University of Boone, North Carolina.
I get a lot of folks, but that's just outside my district.
Well, Congressman, you're an American hero, and whatever you do, call us once you make the news, because we'd love to have you back
on. All right,
so
great to be with you, Charlie. Thanks. God bless you.
Thanks, everybody, so much for listening. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com. That's tpusa.com. You can go to one of our events, start a chapter, chip in some money, and, of course, get your copy of the MAGA Doctrine, M-A-G-A Doctrine. Thanks so much, everybody. From the creators of Cold Case Files and PD Stories comes the next great true crimes podcast, I Survived. Every week, I Survived presents chilling first-person accounts from people who overcame deadly situations, allowing the survivors to describe the events as they unfolded and how they made it out alive. If you love true crime, you're going to love I Survived. Be sure to subscribe on Spotify, PodcastOne.com, Apple Podcasts, and many other podcast apps so you can get new episodes every week.